God created the sun, moon, and stars on the fourth day for specific purposes in relation to planet Earth. Now, new research indicates the sun may be much younger than previously thought. Could the sun really be young? Stay tuned.
The sun truly is a great light. It's a source of light for us, and it was also created for our benefit.
This is Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal. I'm Chris O'Brien with the Institute for Creation Research.
And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. Genesis 1 verses 14 through 18 describes specific purposes for the sun, the moon, and the stars. Please join us today as we take a look at the greater light, our own sun. Dr. Donald DeYoung is a professor at Grace College in Indiana and adjunct professor of physics and astronomy for ICR's grad school.
The sun is described in the Bible as the greater light that rules the day. The question arises, just how great is it? It looks fairly small in the sky. But that's only because the sun is 93 million miles away from us. To visualize the actual size of the sun, let's consider it for a moment as a large ball, perhaps a beach ball. The question then is, how many worlds would fit inside this hollow ball? Would 10 Earths fit inside the sun? Or 100? Or 1,000? The actual answer is that 1,000,000 Earths would easily fit inside the sun's volume. The Earths would be like tiny BBs inside a beach ball. The sun truly is a great light.
What makes up this great light?
Now, of course, the sun is not hollow. Instead, it's filled with nuclear reactions and radiation and hot gases. If you light a match, the flame temperature is about 500 degrees centigrade or 900 Fahrenheit. But the sun's core is 10,000 times hotter than this match flame. Now, let's think for a moment about the Earth's relation to the sun. If we were just 30% closer to the sun, the Earth would be at the location of Venus. Venus experiences a runaway greenhouse effect. Its surface temperature is like the match flame we were describing, about 900 degrees Fahrenheit. Such would be the Earth's fate if we were closer to the sun. Now, if we move outward from the sun by 50% of our current distance, we come to Mars. On Mars, the temperature averages 100 degrees below zero. It appears that the Earth has been placed at just the proper distance from the sun for our benefit. The sun is a mighty furnace. It produces energy by a combination of nuclear fusion and also perhaps slow gravity contraction. In the fusion process, the sun is turning its mass into energy, which streams outward in all directions. In fact, every second, the sun converts 8 billion tons of itself into pure energy. The sun actually gives off more energy every second than mankind has produced since the creation.
Dr. Danny Faulkner is professor of astronomy and physics at the University of South Carolina and adjunct professor for the Institute for Creation Research in California.
In the theory of the sun, down in the core, there are several processes going along whereby hydrogen is fused into helium. We astronomers and astrophysicists say hydrogen burning. It's not burning like with a flame or some sort of combustion, but it's nuclear reactions going on. And it reduces an unbelievable amount of energy. That much mass goes over Niagara Falls in the form of water in 10 minutes. I mean, take all the water that goes over Niagara Falls in 10 minutes, collect it, totally turn it into energy, then that tells you how much energy the sun releases in 1 second. This is happening down in the core where we can't see it. It takes the light a long time to diffuse its way out. It gets absorbed and re-emitted many times before finally the surface of the sun emits the radiation. The theory says that the temperature of the sun in the core is between 15 and 16 million Kelvin. That's nearly 30 million degrees Fahrenheit. So it's very hot environment.
This is the way the sun has traditionally been viewed according to evolutionary theory. But something called neutrinos, produced from nuclear reactions of the sun, tell us a different story.
And the neutrino is a very interesting particle because we think it moves at or nearly the speed of light. No electrical charge, and this is the really quirky part. They almost never interact with matter. So while we're speaking here, there are a number of neutrinos passing through your body from various sources, but it's no problem because your body's not stopping any. So you have these ghostly particles going all the place, and they contain a substantial amount of energy. A good portion of the energy in the universe would be locked up in these things, but they hardly ever interact with matter. And these neutrinos, since they almost never interact with matter, are, instead of taking a long time to get here from the sun, are going to take just 8 minutes to get here. They're going to zip right through the sun as if it's not even there, zip past through the space from here to the Earth, zip past the Earth if it's not here, and keep on going. But if we build a neutrino telescope, it's a special thing containing that large collector that has the deck stacked to pick up the particles, then we can detect neutrinos from the sun.
So that's exactly what someone did. They built a neutrino detector.
Back in the 1960s, a fellow named Raymond Davis built the first neutrino telescope in a gold mine in the Black Hills of South Dakota. They built it down deep underground because, unfortunately, other events like cosmic rays can mimic these neutrino collection events. And if you get down deep under the ground, that avoids a lot of those mimic events. And almost right away, his experiments showed that the sun was producing only about one-third of the neutrinos predicted. And this number has held up over the past 30 years as they've continued to refine that particular experiment. And consistently, we end up with fewer neutrinos than predicted, somewhere around one-half of the predicted neutrinos.
Predictions based on the theory that the sun is billions of years old. What's wrong with this picture?
The approach that astronomers are taking in calculating the neutrino flux from the sun is that the sun is 4.5 billion years old. Now, as a star ages with 4.5 billion years as the sun supposedly has, the core changes. Its core originally starts out about 75% hydrogen. Today, it would be over 50% helium due to the acquired result products of the thermonuclear reactions over 4.5 billion years. That would change the mean molecular weight, which would change the structure of the core, make the core hotter, and it would drive the reactions even faster than they were before, which causes the sun to get brighter. That's another little sidelight I have here. According to stellar evolution theory, the sun today should be 40% brighter than it was 4.5 billion years ago when the Earth first formed. It should be at least 25 or 30% brighter than it was when life first appeared 3.8 billion years ago, according to evolutionary theories.
What does this information do to evolutionary theories regarding the age of the sun?
That is an indication, I think, that the sun cannot be that old. Because if it were shining all this time, the sun would have gotten gradually brighter. And we're wringing our hands over global warming and so forth. Well, this would have resulted in about a 15 to 20 degree Celsius temperature increase, which would have meant early on the average temperature of the Earth would have been below freezing. That would have been the average temperature of the Earth. Life would have been difficult using the standard paleontology history of the world. I don't think anybody seriously suggests that the Earth was ever that cold. In fact, if anything, in the past, there were periods of time when the Earth was substantially warmer than today. Now, you can argue about greenhouse gases being greater in the past and less than today. That's an issue I don't want to address right now, but there are some problems with that. Sustaining some sort of equilibrium over many hundreds of millions, if not billions, of years. Have the Earth's atmosphere evolve along with the sun's evolution so to just compensate to allow life.
Dr. Faulkner and ICR grad student Keith Davies are working on a better explanation. Dr. Faulkner.
What if we construct a model of the sun that's not 4.5 billion years old, but only a few thousand years old? I would call this a zero-age sun, or in the parlance of astronomy, a near-zero-age main-sequence sun. Then you don't have a core made mostly of helium. You have it made mostly of hydrogen. The initial composition that we see in the surface of the sun is the same as you have in the core of the sun. We believe that the Lord would have created this sun with a uniform composition throughout, right at the edge of the beginning of thermonuclear reactions. This would have made for a very stable sun, but it also would not give it any kind of appearance of age because it had no age. And so over time, and a few thousand years since the sun's been here, the thermonuclear reactions began to kick in. If anything, the sun may have gotten a little fainter in this process, but not much. It would have stayed about the same. And given the fact that the core is not as hot as it would be at a 4.5 billion year old sun, the nuclear reaction rates would be reduced a bit. Some of the energy would be coming from gravitational contraction rather than from nuclear reaction, but at least half of it would be coming from nuclear. And our preliminary estimates seem to indicate that the predictions, if you will, of this approach, this model, are more consistent with the data of these various solar neutrino experiments. So in one fell swoop, if this works out — this is preliminary, I want to caution everyone — if this works out, then we would have, first of all, an explanation for the solar neutrino problem, and number two, we would have a good evidence that the sun is not nearly as old as most people think.
ICR graduate student Keith Davies.
Dr. Ralph McNutt, he's a space scientist at the Johns Hopkins University, Maryland. And as part of his work, he was looking at many years of data from a satellite that was monitoring the surface of the sun. Then by chance, he happened to compare this data of the surface of the sun with the data of the monthly neutrino flux that came from the center of the sun. And he found, much to his amazement, that the regular variations in each of the two data sets, one from the surface, one from the center, looked just the same. I mean, he really was amazed.
What does this indicate?
If the sun is old, it would be quite impossible for any changes at the center to correspond on a monthly basis with activity on the surface of the sun. That is, of course, if the sun is an old sun. Now, the marvelous thing about this new theory of the sun as a young star is this: that young solar mass stars would have a completely different method of transporting energy to the surface. Young solar mass stars would be what astronomers call, they'd be fully convective. And what that means is that they could very rapidly convey energy right from the innermost depths to the surface. So this is another aspect of this new model of the sun that could well be very significant.
This theory of the sun as a young star fits nicely into what creation scientists believe about the age of the Earth.
We're trying to create a model of how the Lord would have created the stars in the first place, for a purpose, for a function. The sun should be made for a specific function, which is to provide light, provide energy, provide heat for the Earth, and it would be made in the best possible way for that function. And this is exactly what creation scientists are doing right now. We're trying to look at the universe in a way that involves the universe having design and having purpose and having a reason for everything that's made. And that reason does not of necessity involve the objects being old.
Thank you for joining us for today's program, The Young Sun. Our free offer today is Impact Article Number 276, Evidences for a Young Sun. It's written by one of our speakers today, Keith Davies. That's Impact Article Number 276. Just ask for it when you contact us at ICR. To ask for today's free offer, please call toll-free 1-800-7-GENESIS. That's 1-800, the number 7, and the word Genesis. And you can address your letters to ICR at P.O. Box 2667, El Cajon, California, 92021. If there's a topic you would like us to cover on the program, then email us at radio@icr.org. ICR's website address is www.icr.org. Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal, is a production of ICR. For the Institute for Creation Research, I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.